Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today is Mr. Nicholas Press. He's the MD and CEO of Spectainer in Australia and Singapore. First and foremost, Nicholas, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You are most welcome. Yes, Nicholas, as I always do with all my, shall we say, interviewees or accused, whatever title they prefer, I always allow them to elaborate a little bit on their history in logistics. So before I get into your actual product, how come you ended up in the position you're in, kind of in logistics, please?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'll be honest, I don't come from the industry originally. I was one of those kids that joined the army at 18 in Australia and thankfully went to Royal Military College, which is sort of the Australian version of Sandhurst or West Point. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was actually allocated into logistics as an officer when I graduated. And I ended up specializing in what they call movements, but in sort of defense speak, that's intermodal logistics, strategic logistics of how to deploy and redeploy battle groups around the world. And funnily enough, I ended up specializing in that and deploying a fair bit around the world and went to all the, you know, the lovely places of the last 20 years of military conflicts. But I ended up doing a couple of tours of Afghanistan. And it was actually in Afghanistan that I really learned to love logistics in terms of seeing it in real time, the effect of what you're doing and supporting people in real time. So that's sort of a little bit of my background, but it definitely doesn't come from the shipping sector, but it comes mainly from the military background.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must say that's a very impressive background. I think you were one of the first interviewees I've had that had that particular background. So I can say we can expect from you when you say something, you will do it and it'll be on time, right?
Oh, very mission oriented. Don't worry about that.
Good. Yes, I understand Spectainer, the company that you are the MD and CEO of. What can you tell our viewers about the company, the establishment and your main product line, please?
Yeah, sure. So look, a little bit flowing on from what I was just discussing with Afghanistan, it was actually in 2008, I was sitting in Kandahar Airfield, which was the largest logistics hub for Afghanistan at the time. And it was actually just prior to when Obama had announced that they were going to surge US forces in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And so with the Americans, everything the Americans use has to be made in America. So as a result, we ended up having a supply chain in which everything was built in America, packed in containers, and then shipped into Karachi. Mm-hmm. And then from Karachi, it was road trucked into Kandahar, and then it would sort of disperse from there. And when I was sitting in there, you know, we looked around, and at one point, we just had thousands of these containers just piled up across the bases. And, you know, when we looked at the time and worked out that the average box cost, let's say, $3,000 to $3,500 to buy, but it cost $12,000 or $13,000 to bring it into country. And then you add the factor of, I don't know, bombs in the road and things like that. It just didn't make any sense to return the containers. No. And so, as I said, we kind of had this mass accumulation of empty containers all around these bases. And engineers are clever guys and they work out ways to turn them into bunkers and things like that. But, you know, for every one they got rid of, there was another 100 that turned up. And so as a logistics guy, I just started looking at this problem and thinking, well, hang on, this doesn't make much sense. Like, what is going on here? I get the simplicity of one in and, you know, you don't want to send it out. But why is this happening in this sort of quantity? And it sort of led me down the garden path of trying to understand the problem a lot more and understanding, you know, how big this problem forms, because usually if it's a military problem, there's usually a civilian application to it somewhere down the line or at least somewhere in the future. And so from there, that was sort of the inspiration to say, there's got to be a solution to this problem. And that what led me to develop Spectainer. And Spectainer is essentially two businesses. On one side of the business, we are an innovation and R&D company, which we develop industrial level technology for the shipping and logistics industries. And this is very much sort of the real industrial sort of stuff, the physical stuff. We very much are aware and embrace IoT and digitalization, but we work out ways to include that, not to develop it ourselves. The second half of the business is that we're an asset leasing company. So all this technology that we develop, we then lease to the market. And most importantly, what we have developed and what we are coming to market at the moment with is a collapsible container solution.
Right.
I guess I will just add to that, though. We are very aware that collapsibles have been around for a long time. They've been tried in many different ways. But I think what we're doing is looking at it in a very different way, which, you know, I'm happy to elaborate on.
Okay. That's very interesting. I mean, there's no doubt that space, especially now, is at a premium. And I can imagine looking at all these empty containers, which basically are just, when they're empty, it's air surrounded by by steel. And why not collapse it? It's in a way strange that it has not been, let's say, more aggressively put on the market before. Why would you say that the product that you are having, collapsible containers, what is the strength you would say that you can provide to would-be customers in order for them to buy your product and not a competitor's product?
Sure. Look, I think, as I said, there's been many attempts at collapsible containers, and there's other companies in the market doing this right now.
Yeah.
I guess there's a couple of things that I would say. Firstly, because of my background from a logistics perspective, everything I looked at when I designed the system originally was looking at it from an operations perspective, not an engineering perspective. And so understanding that there are some fantastically engineered solutions in the market and have come before, but they're not operationally scalable. And I think that's one part of the problem. When we've got, the size of the fleet as it stands today and the fact that it's growing and the congestion is getting worse and worse, having systems that take 20, 30, 40 minutes to collapse, having systems that require external components to combine together, having systems that need a lot of labor to collapse, all these contributing factors on an operational level mean that the process is slow and not scalable. And I think when you're talking in the context of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of containers going through ports, if it takes that long and it's that complex, then you're not going to achieve a scale, which therefore means you're not going to achieve any savings in the long run. So I think one aspect of this has been the operational side. And I think the big point of difference we have with our product is that we made the step very early on to separate the collapsing from the collapsible.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that we have our core product, Collapsicon. It's a collapsible intermodal container, 40-foot high cube, collapses and combines four containers into one using no external parts. Mm-hmm. The container itself is actually just a tiny bit more internal capacity than a normal 40-foot container just because our floor sits a little bit lower. But it acts and performs exactly like a normal container.
Right.
That said, there's no bolts or anything like that. It all is a self-contained unit. The reason why I say we separate the collapsible from the collapsing is because we've also designed a secondary system, which is a fully automated collapsing station.
Mm-hmm.
And the system is designed in which it is drop and go functionality. You simply place the container in, the system will suck it in. You can keep placing more and more containers on the system. And the system will then collapse and bundle the containers together and eject combined blocks. Same is utilized for the reverse. You simply put combined blocks onto the other side of the system. The system will suck it in and eject individual units on the other side.
Okay.
The system itself is operated by one person sitting in a control booth, simply pressing the automation buttons. And the core of that is that it enables us to not only collapse containers at speed. So we work to about a 2 minute per box speed.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's at the moment on our deployable version.
Mm-hmm.
When we move to a fixed variant, we're going to actually try and get that a bit faster on top of that. But it gives you the speed. It also ensures that you don't have a lot of labor requirements to have, you know, multiple cranes and people doing things. And most importantly, what it does is it ensures that the operator in and around the system is safe.
Okay.
Because not only is the operator in a dedicated booth, the system has a whole suite of sensors in it to ensure that the system cuts off if there's any, you know, people getting in and around the componentry. So I think a combination of these two factors are very important because the container combined with the platform enables us to do collapsible containers at scale. And yeah. I think as the market is moving in this direction, the scale is the most important thing of the whole equation. It's very good to have collapsible containers, but if we're going to make an impact, you know, operationally, economically, and environmentally on the industry in dealing with the issue of empty containers, it's got to be an automated solution.
Yeah, yeah. So would I be correct in saying that these collapsible containers that you are marketing, would they have the same strength as normal containers? I mean, they're different sizes. Of course, you have 40 footers. Have you also done 20 footers? Who do you feel would be your primary customers? Would it be ship owners, shipping lines?
Sure. So there's two questions in that. The first one, when it comes to the containers and the strength and the sizes, for now we've just decided to stick with 40 foot high cube.
All right.
We do see a value in 20 foot, but I think you have to start somewhere. And when 40 foot high cubes are the most utilized asset in fleet, that was where we chose to put our attention. The system design has the ability to be downscaled to a 20 footer. But if anything, we actually see more value in going to larger scale. And we see 45s and 54s as more of a desirable size to move towards as next innovation.
Okay.
But that said, the system is designed to be able to be scaled to different sizes. Fundamentally, the COS platform, the automated platform that I was discussing earlier, that can actually be, it's a modular system. And there's a couple of reasons for that, but that can be realigned to take different sizes without any major shift. It's just a sort of a calibration aspect. But ultimately, the technology is designed for different scales. We've just decided to stick with 40 foot high cubes for the time being.
All right.
When it comes to your second question around the customers, look, I'm very open in saying this technology is not meant to replace every container in the world.
Of course,
right?
Not,
no. This technology is really designed for the heavy imbalanced trade lanes.
Yeah.
And so therefore, what we do is we deal with customers that are looking to make a major impact on their empty repositioning and imbalanced routes. And so when we look at the technology, I'm very open in saying that it's not designed for small scale. No. So if a customer would say to me, look, I have a very imbalanced trade lanes around the islands. I need 20 containers, just to be able to improve efficiency. Our technology really isn't designed for that.
No.
Because
you need
the
volume.
It's designed for the big trade lanes. It's designed for the Shanghai to Long Beach type routes.
Right.
It's not designed to replace every container.
No, it's clear. In fact, I had a talk with a big ship owner yesterday here in Europe, and he told me that on the major trade lane, the biggest one in the world, I believe now is the Asia to Europe. And on the typical leg back from Europe to Asia, it's about 40 to 50% of empties that the major ship owners are returning. And imagine the amount of extra containers they could take using your product. I mean, that would really have a benefit that can be felt big time. And as you said, 20 containers around the islands of New Zealand, that's really not interesting for you, I believe.
Well, look, I think every customer is interesting. I think we're just very open and honest about the value of our product. I don't want to waste someone's time promising these levels of efficiencies when our product really isn't designed for that market. I guess one of the things when we look at the empty repositioning on those major trade lanes is it's more than just looking at how you can improve the repositioning of the boxes back. We try to take a much more strategic, high level view and look. I have a saying in the business, never look in terms of days, look in terms of decades. And so when we look at this more strategically, it's about understanding, okay, if we can reduce the empty repositioning cost, that's fantastic. That's our core goal. But if we look more long term, what does that mean to fleet management of the actual container line? How many ships do they still need on that route, for example? If you can improve the efficiency of the vessels on that trade lane, maybe you don't need 6, 10, 20 vessels, whatever's on that trade lane. Maybe because you're speeding up the throughput, and repositioning, you can get less vessels, or you can either keep those same vessels and increase the frequency that they go there. So add more routes. Secondly, I think one of the things that we've seen, particularly in the last couple of years, has been this push to increase the size of the container fleet, because the containers have all been sitting in empty container parks. And I think the ability to reposition them gives a more strategic outlook of maybe you don't need to keep adding X number of containers to your fleet to keep up with the demand, because you're getting better utilization rates of your existing. Yeah. So it helps not only with the fleet efficiency, it also helps with the potential CapEx layout over the next 5, 10, 15 years when it comes to containers.
Yeah. Now, I think you're onto something right here. The product seems to me very interesting. What one worry that comes to, let's say, my mind straight away is, where do you produce, or where would you produce these collapsible containers? And would you be afraid these days of copycats, or let's say you're sitting right now in a country close to the biggest copycat in the world? How would you protect your products, so to speak?
So just for the sake of the audience, we currently are producing in Vietnam.
Right.
We actually recently announced a strategic partnership with a company called Austal. Austal is a shipbuilder out of Australia. They're actually Australia's largest shipbuilder. An Australian stock listed company. They have a $500 million facility in Alabama where they produce vessels for the US Navy mm-hmm. and the US Coast Guard. They produce vessels for navies all around the world, and they also produce ferries. Very, very innovative and exciting Australian company. We're definitely the small player in that relationship. but the thing is, Austal is very committed to supporting us and moving forward into container production at mass scale. Mm-hmm. So hence, we're working together and looking at how we expand the ability to produce fleets out of Vietnam, out of their shipyards in Vietnam. Okay. So we look at that and say production is half the battle. You've got to protect it, as you were just alluding to there. I think the reality is that in the world that is the world, people are going to copy things. That's the way the world is. I think we have a very multi-pronged strategy of how we deal with that. One is the fact that, first and foremost, we're a leasing company, right? So all our containers have our codes on them. Yeah. It's not a sale. There is no seconds market. There's no after sales. There's none of that. We are a pure leasing company. We own the assets. We finance the assets. We lease the assets. So one thing is that we know, as a leasing company, who our customers are. So we know that if a box has been leased to shipping line A and we see shipping line B with a box that is the same or similar and it's got a different code on it, then we kind of get an idea that that's a counterfeit item. Yeah. Secondly, the system itself has been specifically designed to not be able to function without the platform. Ah. Right? So you can't manually manipulate a container. Okay. And we've done that for three main reasons. The first is to reduce wear and tear on the system, because if you have some guy in a forklift just pushing and pulling and things like that, the damage, wear and tear on the system will be high. And we, as a leasing company, can't guarantee the quality of the product to the customer that we've leased it to if it's being manually manhandled in that way. So that's one. Two is safety, as I referred to before. And three is security. So you can't actually get in and get into the container to sort of pilfer things along the way.
Right.
But all of those factors mean that you have to use the platform to collapse it. And the platform is digitally enabled, whereby every container has an IoT device on it. And that mm-hmm. IoT device is linked to the container itself by asset number. Mm-hmm. And as a container moves through the platform itself has an IoT suite in it that actually communicates to the containers, and it can identify this container's gone through, it's been bundled with this container, it belongs to this company.
Right.
And so when the platform's going through, it won't actually allow you to do it unless there's a container number identified going through. So if you want to collapse the containers, you got to use the platforms.
Wow. It's somehow now I'm starting to think a little bit about the surveillance society. I mean, with the product you have.
I wouldn't call it surveillance. I call it transparency.
Yeah,
it's
of
the
course.
Thing everyone keeps asking for.
Yeah, no, I just like it. I mean, the way you lay it out here is very interesting because, like you said, they have to use the platform in order to collapse it, and so they can't just run away with a container, copy it, and then suddenly they have a product just like yours. That's well, I mean, I must say, very very smart and innovative. How far are you in the production, the rollout of this system, putting it to the market? How far are you in, let's say, in real terms?
So in a product development state, we've actually gone through 8 iterations of the system over the last few years, and each time has obviously led to more and more improvement. It was a couple of years ago that we decided that we would go full automation, which basically meant a complete redesign of the system to while the functionality was still the same, obviously you had to redesign the system to be able to operate in accordance with the platform and how it works. What we're doing now at the moment is going, we've got a sort of a couple of streams running. The first is that we're conducting trials with a number of shipping lines, and the trial fleet we have is actually booked out for the next, at this stage, 24 months, which is really exciting. So much so that we're actually going to look to build a second trial fleet. Our trial fleets are about 21 units that we have, and so we're going to build a second fleet to accelerate some of these trial activities with some of the lines. But separately, what we are doing is gearing up for mass manufacturing. And so I mentioned earlier, we have a relationship with this company, Austal. Earlier last year, we actually entered into a strategic partnership with a company called, sorry, a financial institution called Climate Fund Managers. They are a representative of Dutch Sovereign Wealth Fund, Environmental Fund, Wildlife Fund. They represent a lot of these environmental-focused bodies. I think off the top of my head, they have about 160 million, sorry, 2 billion euros allocated to them, I should say. And under the partnership agreement, what they've agreed to do is finance part of the first fleet up to $75 million. We will also bring in another 75 million. And the intention is that we will finance the first mass-produced collapsible container fleet over the next 12 months to begin rollout at scale of approximately 10,000 units by July, well, starting July 23. So we're in a bit of a transition point where we are working with the customers quite significantly to trial the fleets, but at the same time, we're gearing up for mass manufacturing and commercialization into next year.
This is all very exciting, and I think your product seems to be the way you laid it out to me here, and being in containerization for many years, it seems to me that of the products I've heard about and also interviewed others, that yours is very well planned, and you seem to have also very strong partners backing you up. I mean, one thing, of course, is the production and the quality of the same, and if you have Austal as one of your partners, I know for a fact that my home country of Denmark bought several of these high-speed catamarans or ferries from them. So I think you have very strong partners there. It's not enough to build and have a good idea. It also has to work and not fall apart after the first handling, you know. So
Absolutely.
you would the containers that you produce, collapsible containers, they would have exactly the same strengths as a normal, let's say, stand-up unit would have, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the key points of our design is that we don't collapse vertically, we collapse horizontally, sort of like a toaster when you see them all packed in. But core to our design is the end frames that we have on the container. And those end frames not only form the structural rigidity, they also form the method of combination, right? So we don't have bolts and things to lock the containers together. They actually lock into the end frames. Those end frames allow us to actually facilitate the blocking nature of the containers, and when they are blocked together, they form a fully laden container. And I think that's really important because as a block, as a fully laden, for the first time now, you'll be able to load these empty containers below the hatches. So you can improve the vessel efficiency because now the strength of the containers is so high that you can put them at the bottom. You don't have to manually, sorry, consistently handle them as you go from port to port to port. Which obviously speeds up the vessel efficiency at port. It speeds up the, well, allows for slow steaming. But that it all is key on the fact that the end frames provide that structural rigidity to treat it in that manner.
Okay, that's also sounds very good. One thing I should say, sitting here in the north of Europe, and you know, where you are located, if it's not Australia, then Vietnam, of course, you seldom have winters. We have quite strong winters here in the north of Europe, and you know, wear and tear, warm and cold, damp weather, -15, stuff like that. You are also then testing your equipment in adverse weather conditions, aren't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, you know, the container has to perform like a container. You know, that's pretty fundamental. And so one of the exciting things as part of our relationship with groups like Austal is that we actually look at that from a design up point of view. So environmental factor is critical because we all know containers don't get treated very nicely on a good day.
That's for sure.
But they're also exposed to this vast array of environmental conditions. Add to that, you know, the salt and all the rest of it. So
That's
it's
it.
critical that our containers perform in all these environments, just like a standard container. And I will add, you know, one thing that's been quite exciting. We just completed a capital raise recently, and we received investment from a company called BlueScope Steel.
Oh,
So
yes.
BlueScope is, again, another Australian stock-listed company. They're the biggest steel maker in Australia. They also have joint ventures all around Asia with Nippon Steel. And one of the things that they support us on is actually looking from a steel materials point of view of how we improve the container going forward, not just in terms of weight and reduction and strength, but even some of these concepts that are on the horizon, like green steel, and how do we reduce the environmental footprint of steel going forward into the design. So all these considerations, we look at this not just as how do we present a container and say to the shipping lines, you guys figure it out. You know, it's really about having it mapped out, as you suggested before, and saying we believe in the fact that to make this work at an industrial scale, you need to provide a holistic solution. And that's not just the product suite, it is the IoT, it's the services, it's the fleet management, but it's also how you manufacture. And so for us, those environmental considerations are really important in how we manufacture and what materials we use.
No, that's I mean, there's no doubt that the green wave is here to stay, so to speak. And here in Sweden, just recently we had a new factory being built in the very north of Sweden here, close to the Arctic Circle, where they intend to make steel which has absolutely no carbon footprint. So there's a lot of
SSAB, I think it is.
I'll send you the name later on. I have it on the top of my head, but it's very also the company called Northvolt. They are making batteries for cars. Also, again, with reusing it all, this kind of whole full circle, you know. So it's all a buzzword that whatever you do nowadays, there has to be a green impact, and it seems you have that covered. I must say, seems very impressive to me, and I'm sure our viewers would say the same. So one of the final questions I will quickly ask you here now. So production in Vietnam, and are you normally based in Singapore or Australia, or where would you say, let's say, where are you managing it all from, so to speak?
So our corporate headquarters is in Australia, where, you know, board of directors, shareholders, but also our innovation and R&D is all in Australia as well. And then all our commercial operations are in Singapore. So the team are in Singapore, the fleet management, all of that sort of side of the house is in Singapore.
Okay, and then with production in Vietnam, of course, you have a team in place to ensure the quality throughout, and
Correct, correct.
Very good. Excellent. No, but I must say, I think I can't think of any more questions off the top of my head, but very, very interesting system here, and especially I think your background from these holiday spots certainly has meant that your product will gain considerable success, of that I'm sure. I want to thank you formally, Nicholas, for this interview. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been fantastic. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today has been Mr. Nicholas Press, the MD and CEO of Spectainer in Singapore and Australia. And they have a very interesting and innovative product to sell soon. So keep your eyes peeled. And for me, thank you very much. And for further interviews, stay tuned to Project Cargo Weekly. Thank you.